I'm Kelly Cervantes, and this is Seizing Life, a weekly podcast produced by Citizens United for Research in Epilepsy, CURE. Howard Zorn is the board chairman for the Epilepsy Foundation of Greater Chicago. He is also a senior project manager at TRC Corporation. After battling epilepsy for several years, Howard opted to have surgery to remove his left temporal lobe. Thanks to this surgery, he has been seizure-free for the past 15 years. Thank you so much for being with us today, Howard. First, I want to start by saying congratulations on being 15 years seizure-free. You have had the optimal outcome from neurosurgery. It's really amazing.
It's been a tremendous ride for all of us.
So take us back. You were 28 when you had your first seizure. Take us back to that time. What was going on in your life?
I was working, and it was came home from work one night and had a seizure in the middle of the evening, a grand mal seizure. And we really knew nothing about it.
Out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
Does it run in your family? Was this something that you were on the lookout for? Just a complete surprise.
I had a febrile convulsion when I was one, and that's really all we knew. There's nothing in my family that related to it or even considered it of something to pay attention for.
It's just completely terrifying.
You
go to the doctor, and what do they tell you?
My wife had Janine had some experience with it. Her father was having heart surgery and had cancer, and so he had some grand mal seizures and knew about it, so she was knew what was going on, went to the doctor, and basically they said, you have epilepsy. And, you know, let's start on different types of medication and see what would be out there, options to treat it.
And so what did that look like? What treatments did you try? How long was it before you got from Howard, you have epilepsy, to you're walking in the door to have brain surgery?
Sure. So, I mean, the first thing was that, you know, we knew nothing about it, absolutely nothing. And so I remember my mother actually had contacted the Epilepsy Foundation and with the president at the time, and that's how we learned a little bit about it, because we really knew nothing. And then when we had started speaking to the doctors, I think I went through in the first 5 years, maybe 7 different types of medications. Yeah. I was still having grand mal seizures. I think that we realized that I was probably having a lot more of, you know, non-grand mal seizures, but, you know, just I would space out for a second. I would stop speaking. My eyes would roll. But something that's so common with a lot of people that have epilepsy that you just don't know it's happening.
Right.
And we just didn't realize that. And that was probably the first 7 or 5 years, as I was saying. Yeah.
And did you ever find out what was the cause of your epilepsy?
So I had, you know, the different types of tests in the EEG, and they said that there was the left temporal lobe in my brain was damaged. And there was no reason, evidence as to how that happened. And when we had had that discussion after multiple meetings, it was like, you know, is it the chicken or the egg, right? Don't know how it happened, therefore you're having the seizures. Could that make the damage in the brain worse? You know, didn't know really what the start of the problem was.
Wow. And so you're going through and you're trying all of these meds and nothing's working. You're still having the seizures. And when did surgery first enter the conversation as an option?
Sure. So I think it was maybe around the 5-year time frame. My parents wanted me to get a second opinion at Mayo. Mm-hmm. And so we went up there. And after the 2-day session that you have up there, I know you have experience with that as well. And they come out and they say their first recommendation was to have surgery.
Wow.
Without a breath. And we basically packed up everything and ran out and said, no, thank you. We were very scared.
Yeah.
We were very intimidated. We didn't even think of that. And I had talked to my doctor about that. And, you know, his opinion at that point is with the different types of medication and controlling the seizures, then that's why sometimes surgery isn't really considered as much as an option because of the different pathways, medication that a lot of people choose?
Well, and, you know, obviously brain surgery comes with a lot of risks attached to it as well. So what, I know that there is extensive testing that needs to be done before you can, before the doctors can determine if you are even a candidate for surgery. What was that testing process like for you?
So I don't remember all the tests, but I do remember one specifically, the EEG, when they go in and what they do is they freeze, because for me the damage was on the left side of the brain. So they go in and they freeze the left side of your brain and see how the right side operates. And can the right side of the brain handle everything that the left side is doing? And so it's pretending that in theory, didn't have the whole left side of the brain. And so how would I react? How was my speech? And it's like a 15-minute test. I mean, it's the prep is longer, but you know, you go in. So they froze the left side.
And how do they do that?
Through your leg, and it comes all the way up into your head.
Oh my gosh.
And it's a 15-minute exam.
Wow.
And I remember hearing that the doctor at the time ran out and told Janine and my family that Howard did wonderful on the test. I mean, he talked about the bears, he talked about, answered some good questions, and his speech was very good. So that's how they felt that because the damage was limited, that they can see in all the other testing that they've done of my brain, and that I did well on this test, that I would be a good candidate to have surgery.
And also, I imagine, because they could localize where those seizures were coming from.
Exactly.
I know that's one of the issues with my daughter, is they're like, we don't know where they're coming from. And unless you can localize that place, then, you know, you can't be a candidate for the surgery. So that's pretty remarkable. So you find out that you are a candidate. What goes through your head?
The first response was no. I just can't do it. It was just, I was so scared. Mm-hmm. I mean, but after, I mean, it was a lot of discussions that Janine and I had. And when I had the second test, we started talking about it a little more.
Yeah.
And then one day, one night, I had a grand mal seizure. And I had to go, after I had the grand mals, the next day I went in and spoke with the doctors. That's how the normal process was.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went in there and he said, my doctor, Howard, listen, I think it's really time that you consider having surgery again. You're a candidate. They know the area, it's localized, you know. There's always the pluses and minuses, but I really think that you should be considerate.
You know, I think it's interesting because, you know, so this is 15 years ago, and how listening to you talk about this and sort of hearing other parents that I've spoken to or my experience, I think the sort of mindset around surgery has actually come a long ways, because now I think it's a little bit more accepted. I think 15 plus years ago, it was such a new and scary thing. And now I talk to so many families who are like, oh my goodness, I wish we could just have brain surgery on my child, which is just like the craziest thing to think about. I'm like, I wish there was just a lesion that they could remove or something like that, that we could find. It's just the most bizarre thing to be in this position where you're actually talking about removing part of the brain.
Right. And a lot of people, again, I was one of the lucky ones. I was talking before, even if you have the surgery, that's not necessarily the answer. Right. We both know a lot of people that unfortunately have had surgery, and it wasn't an option. Right. It didn't stop it.
Right.
It didn't even control it.
Right.
But, you know, for me, and again, we knew about that going in.
Sure. So
but
I guess that
we knew about that potential.
What did they tell you? What did they tell you in terms of what the risks were and what they thought, you know, the cone of possibility was for, you know, your outcomes?
There's always risk with surgery.
Of course.
In your brain, there's always a risk. But because of the testing that I went through, that if there were more concerns or problems with the left side, that the right side would handle it. Because the one other major thing that not many of us know, I mean, everyone uses maybe like 3-5% of your brain.
Right.
And the rest of it's just sitting there.
Yeah.
And so a lot of it is the rehabilitation that you go through about speaking and writing and doing everything.
Right.
That your brain just doesn't do at a certain point. And that is really a part of the rehab. So at that point, that was the risk. And again, I trusted, I felt very comfortable with my doctors, the surgeons that we interviewed and met, which is,
sure, yeah,
you go through that process.
Of course.
And, you know, it was a risk. I felt extremely comfortable from the beginning after meeting the surgeons, yep, and it was a joint decision, Janine and I, and I, we said yes.
Okay, so you have decided to have surgery.
Right.
You're walking into the hospital. What is that day like for you?
That was brutal. We were very, very nervous. Mm-hmm. We were very, very nervous. I mean, we had just found out that Janine was maybe a month into having our first daughter at the time.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, I mean, you know, you have to, I signed all the paperwork, God forbid.
And you have a child on the way.
And we have a child on the way.
And you're having part of your brain removed.
And I'm having part of my, yeah, part of my brain removed. It's a lot of risk,
wow,
a lot of concern. So
yeah,
the pressure, you know, I was obviously not only thinking about myself, but my family.
Yeah. It's a much different thing. You know, you have, you are leading a successful life. You have a marriage and a child on the way. To be contemplating surgery in that realm is so much different than, you know, me contemplating surgery for my, you know, developmentally delayed child.
Right.
The risk if something, you know, obviously loss of life, you know, awful, but the risk of her losing quality of life is almost minimal because of where she's at. But for you, that loss of quality of life is drastic. It's huge.
Right. I mean, there was I remember that Inez, Janine's mother, the first thing that she said, right, one of the things before we went into surgery was cutting back on my medications. And she said that Howard is a new person when we, you know, before even the surgery, but cutting back, I mean, the dosages and the quantities, it just puts you out.
Yeah.
And so being able to get off of some of that, they noticed, you know, oh, Howard's back to himself. And that was, I mean, a comforting thing to hear and another,
yeah,
thing to add to the reason of why, let's go with this.
Yeah.
Let's try this. Because if it works, maybe I'm going to get to be back of whom I was and learn to grow even further.
The part of your brain that was removed, what was that responsible for?
So a lot of that responsibility, the hippocampus and the left temporal lobe, it impacts your memory.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I always say at that point, you know, the concern is, okay, well, you're going to lose some of your memory abilities. And, you know, some of that also goes to the medication that you're on, right? The medication,
right,
you're on just pounds your memory. It pounds your thought process. And I will attest today that, is my memory better? I still forget things all the time. And I will not allow it, nor will my surgeon or Janine let me use that as an excuse. So I refuse to use that as an excuse for the memory. So.
And how long did the surgery take from beginning to end?
Right. So I believe it was approximately 5 hours that I, you know, was under.
Yeah. I don't know how long I would expect it to take,
right,
to have that procedure done, but mm-hmm, you know, not excruciatingly long, but you know.
Not a full day. When I got out, I do remember the story that I was embarrassed to have my family come and see me. And I let my, you know, of course they wanted to. My whole family was out in the in the waiting room. And so I had let my Janine come in. But my parents wanted to come in, and I said no.
Do you remember this at all?
I remember it from afterwards about hearing about it. Because they were a little hurt that I didn't let to. But after a while, I did let them come in. But I was, I mean, not to say I was embarrassed, but I was overwhelmed.
Oh, I'm sure.
Of coming out of being down for so long with the medication that
absolutely
you're on.
Absolutely. And so you come out of surgery and I mean then it's just sort of a waiting game, I guess, right? To see if it worked. Like you
right.
don't know immediately if it's worked.
Correct. I mean, I was in the hospital for approximately 5 to 6 days afterwards. You know, that going through some testing, you know, about, you know, how you feeling, you know, having to, you know, use the facilities by yourself, you know, can you walk, how far can you walk? And, you know, yeah, they 5 to 6 days went home.
Wow. And what was the recovery period like? Were you, did you have to do PT, OT, speech therapy?
I did them all. I think that I was home approximately, I was off of work for about 3 months.
Oh, wow.
Right. And through that time, I was going through some physical therapy, speech therapy for approximately 2 to 3 times a week at the hospital, writing, all of it, because you just, there's no doubt that it's funny to think about it. You know, you could, having trouble writing, having trouble talking, you know. But after the therapy, I definitely got back into that. And it felt really good after 3 months of being at home.
And you haven't had a seizure since?
15 years it's been since the day I had surgery. I mean, I've had 2 girls, healthy girls, that it's been an incredible 15 years.
And so you get to bring your daughter into a world where you don't have to worry about being left alone with her.
Correct.
I mean, just the freedom and the anxiety that this provided your life, I just can't even imagine. And you have certainly given back tenfold to our community, and we are all so beyond grateful for that. So,
well, thank you. I mean, and that was one of the things that we feel that we owe other people, because we are in a certain position that many others are not. You know, we know that other people that have unfortunately have lost family members because of epilepsy. We know other people that their family is not doing well because of that. We had the resources, and a lot of other families don't have all the resources to help them even consider surgery, the doctors, or even the recovery.
For the family that doesn't have the resources or the support, but they think that maybe there's a chance that they could be a candidate, who do they turn to? How do they get more information? How do they find out?
Sure. I mean, I know that there's a lot of, you know, besides the Epilepsy Foundation, right, that are in every state in the United States, even with the support of CURE, it's, you have to ask the question of your own doctor. And if your doctor, I mean, every doctor across the United States is not a specialist in epilepsy.
True.
And then if they're not even a specialist in epilepsy, then that even pulls them further away of having surgery as considered an option. And so it's almost like having to take the next step for the family to contact, whether it's different hospitals in your area, or again, the different foundations, you know, again, the Epilepsy
Finding
Foundation,
CURE.
You need to find the boots on the ground. And at that point, you know, it may not be your local hospital that has the surgeons that do that.
Which makes it that much more difficult for those families that don't have the financial means, perhaps, to travel.
Right.
I would say that so much of our health records have been digitized now.
Correct.
Is probably incredibly helpful, that you can send those records, you could send that MRI, you can send that EEG to another doctor and give them access to those records.
Right.
So that maybe you can have that consultation before having to make the trip. So a slightly uncomfortable question.
Yeah.
You have mentioned a couple times, you know, 15 years seizure-free, knock on wood.
Right.
And I think it's important to point out that you've had the surgery.
Right.
You've been seizure-free for 15 years.
Right.
But there is still the chance that it comes back.
There is still the chance. I mean, my doctor, to him, you know, the terminology, and a lot of other doctors use the term, you know, when do you become seizure-free?
Right.
Right. And his opinion was a 5-year window to be seizure free. And then I don't consider that, right? Someone has asked me beforehand, well, saying since you had been seizure free for so long, do you still have epilepsy? And the answer is yes, because it could still happen. And do I wake up at 3 a.m. and think about that? Absolutely.
Yeah.
I can't make it go away.
Yeah.
It's always going to be
the,
there.
That's the truth of the matter is that even with surgery, even with all of these pieces, we still don't have that cure.
We definitely do not have that cure. We definitely do not have that cure.
And I think the future of epilepsy research is sort of pointing in these alternative methods. You
Correct.
Look at the genetics, the gene editing, all of these things, and we're pushing away from from the pharmaceuticals and into these other treatments, which is really kind of exciting.
It's very exciting. And, you know, for the others, along with considering surgery sooner, right, that allows more people to try to draw the line in the sand and go on with their life and continue to grow.
Well, and I would argue that your story is incredibly important. It shows that there is hope. It is through research that we were able to get to a place where you could be the husband and the father and the advocate that you are today and be seizure free. That you had the solution available that you did was because of the research that was done decades ago.
Absolutely.
So I just, I think that, you know, epilepsy as a whole doesn't have a ton of success stories out there.
Right.
So when we hear them, we want to latch on to them and use them to give everybody else hope as well.
I just want to continue to be an advocate and even is a recommendation for people to consider surgery.
Yeah. Well, and I think that that's an interesting thing to bring up as well, is that surgery is often not considered as a frontline treatment for obvious reasons. The expense, you know, the potential risks are incredibly high. But in some cases, you know, it could be considered one of the, you know, first two or three available treatments out there. And I think that we're starting to see that wave change so that it's not the last available option. Nothing else works. So then you try surgery and you're starting to see that conversation shift a little, which is really interesting.
I think it's a great, it's a great point to bring it up a little more in the beginning of it. Mm-hmm. So you're not waiting 5 years, you know, or 7 years.
Or the amount of damage that could be done or the risks that you're taking just by living with seizures over that time.
Every seizure has an impact on your system.
Yeah.
Everyone. You know, and so all the people that we know that, again, have a seizure, 10 seizures a day, 15 seizures a day, it just hurts them more and more and more every time.
Yeah.
And so if surgery is one pathway to cut back on that, right, it's a better thing for the future, right, to hopefully make their life better in the long term.
Thank you so much, Howard, for
it's been my pleasure.
Chatting with us today and teaching us all about surgery as an available treatment and an option. And we're just thrilled to have you as a part of our community and everything that you and your family do to support us. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. My pleasure.
Thanks again to Howard for his insights into the process and personal choices he made to have surgery to stop his seizures. The decision to undergo neurosurgery can be excruciatingly difficult, and it is incredibly helpful to anyone considering this procedure to understand the process from beginning to end. Howard's story is also a reminder of why it is so important that organizations like Cure continue funding research to stop epilepsy for the millions of people around the world who suffer from this condition. If you want to improve research funding, small actions make a big difference. So today, I'm asking you to let us know your thoughts by commenting on our Facebook page about your experiences with epilepsy. Have you considered or undergone surgery? Do you have another treatment that helped you? We want to hear your story. You can find our Facebook and Instagram page at Seizing Life Podcast and on Twitter at Seizing Life Pod. Thank you.
The opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of Cure. The information contained herein is provided for general information only and does not offer medical advice or recommendations. Individuals should not rely on this information as a substitute for consultations with qualified healthcare professionals who are familiar with individual medical conditions and needs. Cure strongly recommends that care and treatment decisions related to epilepsy and any other medical condition be made in consultation with a patient's physician or other qualified healthcare professionals who are familiar with the individual's specific health situation.